Yeah, this is such
you're a arranged.
Fun station, and I love you guys all. You're listening to KKCR, Honolulu, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox with myself and Marshall. And as he was saying, in the second hour, we're going to have, I think, a really pertinent conversation with the Department of Health on Maui. I'm looking forward to that. Not really excited about the topic, because it's important for us to stay safe, but I wish that we didn't have to worry about some of the things that are going on. And in the first hour, we're going to be focused on a lot of the activities that are going on in the Hawaiian movement.
What a dramatic week we had.
We've had a really dramatic week, from the national to the local. I mean, at the national level, it's like people are banging the drums of war. I have to just kind of
banging the drums, dropping the bombs.
Dropping the bombs. I know. I was listening to Democracy Now! I'm really, really happy that Kauai Community Radio has Democracy Now! On the air. You know, you get so much knowledge, and it's a little overwhelming, but they do such a good job of it that I feel like I can let them speak to those things.
Right, to the international war and peace issues. We certainly have enough to look at right here, that's true.
Yeah, we got a lot to look at right here, and I want to thank all of our underwriters, and if you're out there, people who want to promote either your business or a short-term project, we have these wave riders that go on, and we'll hear a little bit more about the wave riders in just a moment. But you can help Kauai Community Radio keep, you know, Kauai pono as much as we possibly can. You know, pono for all of us. Try and keep everything working on the path that is best for the people. So, if you want to make a Wave Rider donation, call 826-7774. The more that we have of those, it really takes a lot of pressure off the fund drive, and people can always go to kkcr.org and hit donate, and that takes pressure off the fund drive too, because we really, as particularly on this show, like to be addressing topics that are of interest to the community. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store and Betty Jean Nativio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at bettyjeannativio.com or 808-652-3781.
From now until the start of our spring membership drive on April 27th, we encourage you to participate in our Early Bird Drive. All Early Bird Drive contributors will be entered into our Early Bird Drawing for a chance to win either a 4-foot-tall monkey pod ku tiki or a ni'ihau chalet with matching earrings set in a koa frame from Hawaiki Oceanic and Tribal Art Gallery located in Hanalei Center. Our goal for this drive is $70,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or one-time donation today. For more information on these incredible early bird drawing prizes and to donate securely online, visit kkcr.org or call 826-7774. Mahalo nui to Hawaiki, Oceanic, and Tribal Art Gallery for their generous donation to our early bird drawing winner.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
How are you, Felicia?
I'm really good. You know, it's been a, you know, super busy time. There's so many things happening and going on. And I know part of what I do both for KKCR and part of it's a reflection of my spirit is running around trying to follow up on all these activities and actions that are happening on the island. There are so many. And not sure what's going on tonight. Tomorrow night there is the Farmers Union meeting, the Hawaii Farmers Union United meeting, and that's at 6 o'clock at Anahola Clubhouse. And what we're talking about later in this show with the Food Safety Modernization Act, and which I, generally speaking, don't like at all because it outlaws nature. But when we have something like a terrible parasite, well, then it makes a little bit more sense. But so tomorrow night, one of the things on the agenda there is that Thursday night there is the Aha Moku island-wide meeting, and that's going to be at the Kapa'a Library at 6 o'clock. And the Aha Moku is the states of Hawaii's effort at trying to do some collaboration. We have been learning over the past few years, people like me that are newer to it, about the Hawaiian nation, there's a lot of legitimacy in what they say that they haven't, they weren't legitimately annexed. It wasn't legitimately annexed, but it is annexed, you know, so at least for now, you know, so that the Aha Moku system is where traditional cultural methods are encouraged and actually supported by the State Department of Land and Natural Resources. So that's another thing coming up. We'll talk about a handful of things coming up. Next week is Earth Day, so there's a whole bunch of events, I think, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I got to look again on my computer of which elements, but on Kauai Community College, they have a bunch of activities. I know tomorrow morning at the county council, there is, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be there for recognition of women's rights, you know, at the UN level. And there are people, the people who are opposed to it typically isn't because they don't like women. It's because maybe they don't like the UN, you know, or don't like a global governance. So when I've really looked at why people want to stop that recognition of, you know, the women's rights, because you think, why would somebody be against that? But it's really, you know, the deeper layer. But then, of course, there's many people who are very for it.
So I think I missed the connection. You were saying county council, and then you were talking about the women's rights.
Right, because there's a resolution before the county council. So at like 8:30 in the morning, there will be an event there, and then people will go into the county council because the county council is contemplating whether they want to be a part of that resolution to say, yes, we would like the United States of America to be signing on with the UN. Like, we're one of the last countries to sign on to it.
And is this resolution originating here, or is this something that
It's international.
Yeah.
And, you know, the United States has been very reluctant to sign it. They don't want to sign it. And so there's an effort to get municipalities and states, you know, sort of grassroots push up to get that policy in place.
Good. About time, sister.
Well, to have that, you mean?
Yeah. Lift up the women a little bit.
Yeah, so on the surface, that's what it's about, you know? Right. So that layer of it's a really, really good thing.
Right.
And that, you know, I'm listening to the layer of people that are concerned, and there's some legitimacy in that layer, too, because there's a lot of times, like, they can throw out the bait, like trolling for fish, you know, can happen. And I think that even using that metaphor there is a good one to pull into this discussion on what's happening in Wainiha. There's also something very similar in Wailua where people are feeling like, hey, the Hawaiian, you know, I don't want to say all, it's not all the Hawaiians, right? But I mean, like, the Hawaiian culture is being just sold off. They're being pushed off the land. Basically what we do, like, here is in the trolling for fish, and this pulls into the general plan update. And I want to acknowledge that the county yesterday from 2 to 5, as we announced last week, had an informal event at Ha Cafe in Lihue, trying to help people come in and share their mana'o, share their perspective of what is important for the county. And, you know, there's really difficult choices on a world level. It's like all of us were born into the game that we're already there. It's like if you join the Monopoly game after 10 turns, you almost have no choice of whether you own Park Place and Boardwalk, the high-producing properties, or if you have almost nothing or just the really low-producing properties. So it's not that people now are evil. We're looking at what has happened in really a predatory capitalistic world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
So what happens here on Kauai is that we bring in our visitors and we ask them and we sort of, we really promote it. And we love our people that come on vacation, but we promote it really hard. So sometimes they might show up and not be completely welcome because this place is a little bit overwhelmed. And then very often it's almost like bait. They are sold property. They're sold things to be here. And maybe they make some huge investment. Maybe, you know, it's not much for them. But so as the houses and places get sold, then people are here and then they realize, oh, wow, you know, you're not really welcome. And that's because what we are doing is we're displacing our host culture. We are displacing, you know, the essence of what is Hawaii. And we're displacing people all over. So it is a really, it's a tough challenge. We have a phone call.
We do.
Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. How are you today?
Good.
Good. Yeah, you know, I did a lot of work today to try to help this cat. This elderly woman had to go to a rest home. And the cat was in the situation of possibly being taken to the SPCA where it would have gotten euthanized because it's a 12-year-old.
You mean the Kauai Humane Society? Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a 12-year-old cat, and it may have been hard to put up for a dog. Usually when they have real old cats,
okay, right,
the likelihood of them getting euthanized is more greater than if you have a younger, healthier mm-hmm. cat, right?
But any cat, you know, is like 80%.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and I, since I'm an animal lover, and this cat, this woman who just went to the nursing home had no friends or no people to help with the cat, I offered to take care of her cat, right?
Okay, so I appreciate it. Can you get to the point? Because we're actually going to move into a completely different topic.
Except somebody else, some other people were involved, too, but I did 90% of the footwork.
Okay.
And but the other person wanted to claim the credit, right?
Right, okay.
And I was a little dismayed. So
okay.
I called my brother, who's always nurturing and gives me helpful advice, and he gave me this. His wife said this, okay, and this is what I want to say. It's amazing how much you can get done when you don't need to worry about who gets the credit for it.
Yes,
there
absolutely.
You go. That's what I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we need all those people who are super helpful with our animals. And so you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. I'm going to take one more call, but then we're going to be playing some raw feed of some stuff that's been happening. And this is the first time I've actually done this on the show where I'm playing something that other people spoke a little bit earlier, but I think it's very relevant for everyone to hear it. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia.
Yes.
Yes, the issue that I'm greatly concerned about is the fact that, as I understand it, that we're in danger of being irradiated by the shipments that come in at now Willy Willy of the missile components, which contain irradiated materials. And one reason, as I understand it, that the roads were built up was to bear the increased weight of these heavy loads. So anyway, when these components that are headed to the west side for the missile tests are transported on our county roads, if there should be an accident, then a great deal of the population of the south and west side could be wiped out by radiation. So I was wondering if you guys could speak with this on this issue.
Well, I could, and I think, like, you know, I would have to bring in, I've met the new commander of the base, so I would be probably bringing him in. What the inference is that these are nuclear weapons, and I feel very confident that we do not have nuclear weapons on the island, nor are they being transported. And I know that there are rumors that that's the case. But if
I'm not suggesting there are nuclear weapons. I'm saying there are elements, components of the missile aspect that contain radiated elements and therefore pose danger
to
our health.
Like depleted uranium?
Well, any kind of radiation ain't good for you, dear. So
well,
the point is, you know, regardless of what the Navy or whoever would say this, we have to get to the bottom of this because this, you know, if there's an accident, you know, like we're in deep kimchi.
Well, it's really important to me that we explore topics
like
this
responsibly.
Okay, so that's something that I can look at. I know, like in Pahakaloa over there right now in the Army training base, they have a very serious concern of what's happening because it's not even a question. It is there has been depleted uranium when they do their munitions drills there, and right now they are basically bombing that area again, and it's about triple the size of what was Kaho'olawe. And so it's not even a question, are they getting dusted with the outcomes of these missile testing? So there, I know that they have some problems. And
I'm aware of that. I just wish you'd bring that up for a possible, you know, once you look into this to see, you know, what the reality might be.
Okay, and then, so let me just say this while we're on the air.
Thank you.
I want to say something, is that I have looked up and researched with other people who are retired military and seen what is the protocol that is required if we have any kind of missiles or warheads and things like that. There is certain protocol in the fencing, all of that. And we don't have that security level at Pacific Missile Range Facility right now. And, you know, so, like, when people say, I've had many people call and suggest that we have live-action warheads over there, and I do not believe that that's accurate at all. I know that they're considering bringing the Aegis missile over, and mostly they are shooting, you know, duds off for target practice. And so if there's something like depleted uranium that goes on those, I don't know about it, but it might be.
I'm just suggesting there might be components of the missiles, whether it's the target or the interceptor by the Raytheon group, that might contain some kind of source of radiation, which would, you know, whether it's fissionable or of a missile, if it contains any type of irradiated, the point is, like, you know, if our smart meters are dangerous for electromagnetic radiation, what would radiation of a much larger magnitude and amplitude, a quantity, do to the health of the people on this island?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of speculation there, so.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, you know, give gospel. I'm just trying to suggest a topic, dear.
Okay, so,
you know,
I can look into that.
I appreciate it. I love your show. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Felicia. Yeah, no problem.
Felicia, we just had a caller. Unfortunately, I lost. I could not hear him well, but he had some information to share on the topic. So.
Which topic? On the radiation for the missiles or?
I believe it's on the radiation missiles topic, but I'm not sure. I couldn't hear him well, so I encourage him to call back, please.
Okay, at 826-7771. But I have at least announced that I was going to be playing some of this material about what's happening.
Let's move on.
So if they call in the next minute and a half, otherwise I'm going to move on to... you know, I want to play some of this piece, and I want to applaud the mayor, Bernard, for making an effort to work with the people that are concerned about the loss of land and the extinguishing of the cultural practices. You can't practice your culture if you have no place to practice it. mm-hmm. right? If you take over the low E, if you smooth it out and build houses on top of it, if you build resorts on top of really critical spiritual space, you can't practice it. And so last Tuesday, what was concerning is a former police chief who was hired by these wealthy people who wanted to take over this piece of land that, you know, they bought in terms of the Western perspective of looking at it. I mean, I don't really see a lot of argument on that one could say that they are the legitimate owners by the Western standard. But that a former police chief could be able to get a few dozen policemen out there to arrest practitioners, cultural practitioners, who are basically doing something pretty constructive. And go ahead.
So how does that work? There's a former police chief who gave the order for a couple dozen police officers. Is there some sort of chain of command that involves the former police chief? Or?
Well, again, I'm not wanting to spread a rumor. The mayor definitely said he was uninformed. He didn't know they were coming. It wasn't a part of something that he does. The mayor does not actually take control of what the police department does. You know, it was definitely said that because the investigator, the person who was hired to, push these people off the land was the former police chief, that is how they're able to sit there and utilize this level of brute force for, private property issues. And we rarely see that kind of force used for really anything, but it seems like it should be reserved for, bank robbery or, something very, very frightening. And it does get utilized for that for sometimes. But so anyway, the day after the arrest, Mayor Bernard Carvalho, not as mayor, but as the individual, and then our county attorney, Maunakea Trask, and then our Office of Hawaiian Affairs representative, Dan Ahuna, went out there and sat with the people and had a talk story, a kukakuka, as you would call it in Hawaiian, to hear everybody. I was going to do some live, or raw feed. It's not live. This happened last week. So for people who don't really follow this issue, I want to really say, listen. Listen, if you think this doesn't affect you, it absolutely does affect you. And if you're not paying attention, you're the one who most needs to hear it. Now, there's a number of Hawaiian words in here, and I'm just going to kind of let them talk. I'm not going to jump in too hard on it. We have had 25 minutes into this, so I'm not going to be able to go as far into it as I had planned. But I want for people to be able to hear it. I might jump ahead, or I'll skip around a little bit. So we can hear it, but I want to honor the fact that our government went and listened respectfully as family members. And then also last Sunday, at least Bernard, probably other people that are in the lines of authority, did something similar with the Hawaiian nationals, the people who do not feel like they are part of the United States. He did the same thing in Wailua. And so we have to start somewhere, and I recognize that they're doing that.
Are you talking about the Hawaiian nationals on the cocoa palms?
Yes. Thank you, on the cocoa palms. But this right here is about what was happening in Waianae. I'm going to see if I can get it really to play loud enough. And we're hearing Mauna Kea's voice.
Mauna Kea Trask.
Mauna Kea Trask.
You don't have a residential agreement, but you got some kind of oral agreement to grow your kalo on this thing?
This is one of the young men that was arrested. Past with the owners. Like, we've been farming kalo, me and Kalimi, and actually Kalimi here on this kuleana.
All the families there.
For like about 6 years now. And, I moved here from Kohala, Big Island, when I was 18 years old. And, I'm 25 years old now, and one of the first guys I met was Kalimi and Uncle Rob guys, and, automatically was attracted to the energy and the kind lifestyles, And anyways, we found ourselves to be over here, and the guys, Katrina Marner, them, to my knowledge, they from doing a title search, if I'm not mistaken, they bought this land in 2003. So, you know, they've been paying land taxes and whatnot or whatever for over 10 years and whatever. So from when we were living over here in Wainiha, we watched them, cut. This was all hull bush growing over because, already ever since the overthrow and whatnot, all the lands get overgrown and everything. So they cut all the hull bush, they built this house next door, and then everything was just kind of for sale. And they own, this is two properties right here that they bought next to each other. This is a kuleana right here, awarded to Kiba'a, like Okalumi was talking. And next door is just kind of part of the whole Ahupua under Chief is Kikau Nohi. Yeah. But they are two separate parcels. It was never CPR'd. And, we were over here in the knowledge that this was a kuleana and that it was illegally sold at some point or had a turnover from the ohanas that it originally belonged to. And we were aware that there's burials and whatnot on the aina. So, doing our thing as Kanakas, we come in over here and we this is our food source too. We've been coming and planting and eating and us uncle, we Namohoi crew, this place fed our ohana bob many years already. All the canoes come here. We harvest our kalo from here. We feed all the ohana va and ohana from all over.
Not only that, but this is where we constructed many parts for the different various canoes. For me, I grew up on this piece of property. My childhood friends over here. My whole life, I've been here. My whole life on this road. I get my uncle, Rob, my dad was here yesterday. My auntie's here. And they changed and I'll be honest with you guys. I had several kupunas that passed away. They asked us to do something about the burials. One was Auntie Lady Haumea. One was her sister, Auntie Kalehua. Another was Uncle Ipo, which is Palala's grandfather. And my grandmother, which is Viola Harada. And not to mention the Pu'ule Ohana. And then we all related, we're all closely related. My grandpa is David Pa, which is your grandpa's brother. Yeah.
So that's right there you're hearing Ka'imi Hermasura, who is sort of the po'o, the leader of this particular process, speaking with our Mayor Bernard Carvalho. And what you hear is Ka'imi's grandfather and Mayor Bernard Carvalho's father and grandfather. They're brothers. So these guys are second cousins. And we're keeping this going.
Oops. To go to all the burials and to go to the churchyard. So, growing up, that was an automatic, energy of us to malama and go and pick medicine for Auntie Kalihua guys and Uncle Vince. They come over here in the kupunas, we had rich kupunas over here. And so, that was like, we never had that kind of thought of boundaries and, or being, how should I keep, we never had like ideas of land ownership and boundaries because, we're taught this is the lo'i and this is the Ivi Kupuna. And, growing up, I've been raised with all my cousins over here, like really closely, like brother and sister. From the Pu'ules to the Haumeas to the Pa's to the Haumea, And then this is the last place. That number one house on Pahale on top, whatever. But then doing our research, back in the day, if you go look in the old Hawaiian newspaper, it tells and it says that the person who was this, Kiva'a, he was beaten to death by this person named Henry Rice. It was the sheriff at that time. So automatically, and I'm going to tell you guys the truth. Around this aina over here was one of the first murders in Hawaii. Over there, Uncle Rakai, Jack Safri, and he, back in the day, Auntie Rachel Mahuwiki, her lo'i patches over there. Auntie Rachel Mahuwiki was one of the most powerful kahunas ever. That's all our family. So what happened was, One of her Filipino workers was checking out, trying to hook up with Auntie. Uncle Jack had shoot him. One of the first, you know. So we had the kind, and then they, you know, repeat. For me, and for us, you know, it's sometimes people are not comfortable with this kind of stuff. But us guys, we got to go clear all these kind of karmas and then stay around, you know, lingering because not settled. So what the Ohanas did for come and settle this kind of energy, because it jumps into people. And I'm not going to be ashamed for say, it jumps into my cousin, Kuka Ilimoku. It's Auntie Nancy, your son. All of a sudden, you get brain tumors, any kind of stuff. All these people around here, the kids, having seizures. Why? Because must be porno. Never the Pali, never, you know, complete. Never, no more peace. So, you know, the entities will come through our families. And then where would they go to come and be safe and to heal was this place. So we had all the families come and, you know, ho'oponopono, whatever, and then they brought all the ahu, made this ahu over here. And then back in the day, used to have one ahu over here when I was little, and it was more back over there by the banana trees. But when the families came, we gathered the remnants of all the pu'ahu, and then we left it and made this ahu right here. Next thing you know, get all this kind of stuff going, Mauna Kea, you know, get all this kind of ohana just coming all over, and then we don't know where they're coming from, but they like come over here and they like leave ho'okupu. And then they like check up on us, and, you know, the Kalo situation or whatever. But then this is the path, the easement to visit our ancestors. Auntie Lady would come here every morning and pick up Kalo leaf. You know, Auntie Kaliho would come over here and she would clean her fish. You know, and this is where we all make our nets and gather. So, you know, this is a rich spot for our family's traditions and customs and history. Bobby Allen has been here from the beginning also. He's still here. And then, you know, this is a place where the families would build things. Not only from boats to surf bars, but, you know, they also built, the relations come strong over here. So basically, this is the path, the easement to the burials and to the lo'i. And I awarded it to Kiva'a, World Patent 6224, Glad Commission Award 9270. And it says it on the map, okay? So what happened, and what we figured out, being guided to all this stuff, and there's an illegality.
There's an error.
There's an error
in the county charters,
and how the zone, I think, see, because...
The rezoning and the re-evaluation of the taxation of the lo'i.
Of the lo'i.
Yeah.
And in the law, it says, and then maybe this is why it's all jammed up, because, you know, we don't really keep, like, after all the overthrow and, you know, statehood and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, everybody, you know, we kind of got lost a little bit. But then what happened was Akonohiki was the only one, and it says that by law, who can make the assessment of the value of the lo'i, of the land, you know. And this is all lo'i. Then they came and made tax map key. So, you know, there's a big history with that kind of thing where... We have our interest, a 1/3 interest into all these, you know, these parcels. And, you know, Uncle Lico, we will be looking, why is this calling out so loud to us? Yeah, we know it's the burials, and then there's this, there's been, you know, unsettled things over here, and there's a lo'i, but then there is an error. We can have Uncle Lico share more about that.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, and this is a discussion between some of the people that are protecting the land in Waineaha from intensive development, where there is a vacation rental slated to cover over a traditional lo'i, which is a historically protected place. There are a number of people who share their mana'o with the mayor. I'm going to skip past some of it, though, because we have a limited amount of time, and because everybody that I am playing, I have had their permission to come and be sharing it on the air. I want to make sure that people are comfortable with it. What we're going to hear in just a moment here is Mauna Kea Trask, not speaking in his official position as the county attorney. But he's going to be explaining some of the history that he's looked at on the property here. And, you know, everybody's history is a little bit different, but he definitely did some very much some research. And I think it is of value that this is the way that the county is looking to beginning to resolve this issue. So we have heard from in here Lico Martin and Kayola Worthington, who they didn't grow up right in this valley here, but they're part of it. So we're going to hear the mayor jump in here.
Explain all the other things that are happening and how to be real on what is on the table and then go from there.
Okay.
Because we got to deal with a set of things that we have to look at and how to merge that or not and make this be part of the next step.
Anything that was Kuleana lands or Konohiki lands from the king, they had an in-rim Alodia title that came with that, which I found out the in-rim Alodia title throughout when I did our property with Uncle Ezra in Hanalei. Upon filing all our paperwork, there was no dispute in the paperwork. Because I was a Kuleana living on the land, was handed from to David Kaeleiki through the heirs as Konohiki. So when we file our papers, I never used any other outside lawyers because they couldn't present the paperwork that I could present as a homeowner or as a Kuleana on the land. So what that did is it separated me from the court. And the whole problem today, Bernard, is the realtor people is not disclosing the proper paperwork about the land and the Kuleanas that come from the land. And title guarantee only guarantees land from 1976 to today present. If I come as a Kuleana from before 1976, they don't cover that. They have their, it says that in their fine print. And there is one of the problems right there is the realtor people is not disclosing all the problems of the land. And if this person never disclosed to Joey Cohen that this kind of problem would occur, then Joey Cohen should be freed from that contract that he made with this guy because he never disclosed that there was going to be a big problem upon him coming with the tractor and bulldozing this place. So the proper channel through you guys' system is not working for us because there's nobody to mediate the problems.
Yeah.
The cops come out 100 miles an hour driving through Hanalei Town. I don't know how much cars I saw just for family. Peaceful people who living on the land growing food. Something got to change with that. Your guys' office have to be aware of this kind of things that's going to happen. They got to be here to settle the peace. Because if they don't settle the peace, only looks us like activist people. We're all mad and we're all angry people. But in our hearts, we're only growing food that we fear and feed into anybody who comes. So the problem is the Kuleana properties. The Konohiki properties, that's forever. The judge cannot rule over it. The person who buying it cannot buy it because it's not for sale.
Not supposed to be.
Not supposed to be for sale, you know. So even if my family had sold, they only sold their share. They never sell my share. They never sell my cousin's share. They only sold their share.
But like then, they include too for perpetuity.
Yes.
Means even unborn.
Even unborn has a right to that land.
And that's Kayola Worthington.
Let me
please share.
I want the weather to get so. What I got right here is when Grandma Kaleo passed away, or before she passed away, she gave me this. This is Ty Hoke's copy of the original Waini'a Partition Act in 1942. So this was McBride Sugar Company Limited versus William Aruna, Ruby, Ahakuelu, etc. And it goes all the way down. The caption on this thing is like 3 pages. See, this is Grandma's circle. Elizabeth Ty Hoke.
All of that.
Clark, right there. So this is what, at one point, all our grandparents had.
All.
Okay, she kept hers. So I went through this years ago. It's the whole thing. It's the order. It's the partition action. She gave it to me because I thought I could do something with it. And obviously, for these reasons. In the back is the map, original map from Sanborn,
We surveyed all the lands. That's the Wainiya partition.
Yeah.
That's the Ahuwa.
Original.
The 1948 real property tax map key was taken off of this. And if you look, as you know, all the circles are Wainiya land lot numbers. Those are not Kuleana. Okay. Although, to all of us, the land that we have is our Kuleana. We take care of it. To legally qualify as a land under 1850 law of Amendment 3rd, granting to the inhabitants right and title. That's the land commissioner award number. And they're all listed here. I'll put this away right now. I want to get home right now. So, what I've done, and I've been looking at it over time. So I got my bearings on my property.
And this is KKCR. We are hearing Mauna Kea Trask speaking. This is raw feed to people who were arrested the day before. Got a little bit of ambient noise. We'll see if we can keep this working.
I knew some. I didn't know everything. I learned that there's a lot for me to learn. But when I got involved in all this stuff, like everybody, I was like 15 years old. Okay, and we all heard that thing. The overthrow was illegal, obviously, 1892. To Julio Kalani, you're done. Get inside the armory. You're pumped. That was the overthrow. It's called, you know, like...
Call it attention.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you. So, what you have... Well, I learned about at that time, there's an argument. It's called I call it the fruit of the poisonous tree argument. And that is, because the overthrow was illegal in 1893... Everything subsequent thereafter is illegal. It's like a time machine. It takes you back then to 1891, because the real overthrow was 1892, but they did their constitution in 1893. That's the fruit of the poisonous tree argument. I call it that because in criminal cases, if a cop searches somebody illegally and finds something illegal, everything thereafter is fruit of the poisonous tree and doesn't come into court, and you walk, depending, right? So I believe that from I was 16 to I went to law school. And then I went to all the teachers, like, I found it. This is it. Writ of mandamus, Supreme Court, we're done. This is all illegal. I learned it from Kanye when he used to drive around his four-wheeler on Kalia Beach. You know? And he goes, hey, brother, because I got this when I was 18. He's like, you know what that means? I go, yeah, I know what that means. But I know what I know. Legally. Okay, I'm not saying it's right. There's difference between philosophy and justice and the law and courts. That's why I went to law school. Philosophically, that's 100% correct. And that's the argument to go where we're going to go in the future. Because canoes move forward. They don't move well backward. We all know that. Okay, we got to move forward. It doesn't work in court. It doesn't. We all know. I went to law school. I learned it. I defended people as a public defender. I learned it. I prosecuted people. I learned it. We all learned it. Now, when Rob comes in with this title, and people see him, and they back down either because they're scared of him, or you got another legal argument, it's not because of 1893. You win on the other merits. Butchie Durant's case is a great example. They didn't have right and clear title. But that doesn't mean that the general sovereignty thing was the winning argument. It was a matter of burden of proof and evidence. Those are two different things. They appear to be similar sometimes, but they're not necessarily similar. Okay? That's important to understand. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's the way it is. Monolodial title. Okay? So Mahele is true. The history of the Mahele goes like this. And before I used to get really... I was very angry at the chief before because they sold everything out. Okay? That was my feeling of it. But then I learned because of that, it was, I'm not going to second guess them. They were living in Hawaii in the 1800s, and it was very hard to be anything but white in the 19th century throughout the world. You go ask all of Africa, you go ask anywhere in Polynesia, you go ask any Native American. If you are white, it was difficult to live. Guns, germs, and steel. They took you from smallpox, they shot you, or they just didn't care. Slavery. Okay? That's a reality. So what happened was, as some of you know, the first overthrow was not in 1893, that was the second. The first one was like 1839 or something like that. And that's when the with, I think it was Rear Admiral Thomas. I forget who.
43.
Yeah, he came over and he took it. He said, you know what? You guys, we want to own land. We're coming over here. We're taking it. Kamehameha III, at the time, Kawakiole, wrote a letter to the queen, and they worked it out. And so therefore, they gave it back. He came back. George Vancouver gave it back. No, it wasn't George Vancouver. Somebody else gave it back to him. He stood in 4th Street Mall, and he said, Uamau Keo Ukaina Ikoho. Right? So Uamau is not an environmentalist cry. Ea is defined to be like the life, right? But it also can be understood to be the sovereignty. You know, we always chant Ea at the marches. So the sovereignty of land is perpetuated righteousness. He stood back, and when he took the kingdom back, he said Uamau. And that was the importance of it. He understood thereafter that 19th century in the world, the Industrial Revolution happened, and the French Revolution happened. 1776 was the United States, 1778 was France. They were getting rid of the feudal land system all throughout Europe. We were moving from kings and queens to capitalists and industrialists. And that's what was going on all over the world. And immediately with railroad and steamships, Hawaii was in the crossroads of the Pacific. Whale oil came through, sandalwood came through, ag came through. We can grow stuff all the time. We all know that. In order to prevent another overthrow, he had to do the Maihele, he believed. And so they started in the 1840s. Okay? They do this. So in 1939, he wrote out the original Hawaiian Bill of Rights. Okay? It's called the Magna Carta of the Pacific. He says, you know what? I'm going to give up my supreme authority as king. And we're going to move forward to give the people and solidify everything. Because that's how you preserve the people. Hawaiians are aristocrats. They weren't, you know, nowadays we've got kind of an identity crisis. But our kupuna did not feel like they're from Jamaica or L.A. You know what I mean? They felt, they were highly educated, all that stuff. They weren't ignorant. So they were going in. They said, okay, fine. If this is the way it is, we get the land. So they do the Mahele. The Mahele divides everything into thirds. One third to the king, one third to the konihiki, one third to the people. Government land. So this is from, if you want to read it, it's called The Principles Adopted by the Board of Commissioners to Quiet Land Titles in their Adjudication of Claims Presented to Them. This was not only a non-Hawaiian thing. John Papa'i'i was on it. Samuel Kamakau was on it. Okay, there was upstanding, the Kioniana was on it. So a couple of things. They came up with the principles. The board was, it was formed in 1846 and dissolved in 1855. Now on allodial title is land that is free from, it's in concept, it's you can do whatever you want with it. It's mine forever. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, given what was going on, although Kanakas were given, quote, allodial title, it was considered allodial only to the extent that it was no longer subject to feudal control, meaning the king. Okay, the king could not dispossess you. Hawaiians never owned land. We all know, we never owned land before 1850s. We had a right to live it, and the Konihikis needed us to fight their wars, so they had to keep us healthy. But we were never, the new war, new chief, new Konihiki. But the Makainana were always there because we were essential. We had to work it. They can't work the land themselves. That was our power, and I maintain that's still our power.
And so that's Mauna Kea Trask. We're going to hear a little bit from our Wave Rider program and the Early Bird Special. And KCC's Earth Week is really what we're going to focus on for a second here.
Earth Week celebration
of Earth Day
at Kauai Community College, happening every day of the week, Monday, April 17th through Friday, April 21st. Featured speakers include Dr. John Osorio, Tiare Lawrence, a water panel, Kui Kalo workshops, amongst many other aloha and activities occurring Monday through Thursday, 3 to 6 p.m. in the One Stop Center at Kauai Community College. And Friday, a big ho'olau lea with bands, food, informational booths about those ho'olau aina, and much more from 10 to 2 p.m. Earth Week celebration
of Earth Day
at Kauai Community College, happening every day of the week, Monday, April 17th through Friday, April 21st.
Ben, mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. I think I'm going to try and skip ahead a little bit. You know, the ambient noise in the raw feed is a little strong.
Yeah, but it's worth the effort because this is really valuable information.
Yeah, and then I want to say that probably by tomorrow or the next day, the video of this is going to be out on Hoike, and where it's all in one long stream. I have put it on my Facebook page. It's up on YouTube. There are some pretty interesting comments that come in here. I'm just kind of trying to see if I can bounce it up enough to find it where... Or I might just paraphrase, actually. It kind of really surprised me. Like, one of the things that was a comment that he was making, that was being made, is, you know, everybody knows that there really was an overthrow and an illegal taking. And I was speaking with somebody even just yesterday who works with the people at the UN, and that is pretty much accepted knowledge. And I was told... You know, but that happens everywhere, you know, so it's hard for to chase down every one of those displacements. But it is a recognized element that it's displaced. And Mauna Kea made a comment that kind of surprised me in here where he said, well, you know, we know what happens. There'll be another hurricane. There'll be another tsunami. Empires fail. You know, the United States, the empire of the United States will fail, and that, you know, it will be given back at some point. You know, that it takes a lot of faith for people to feel like, oh, okay, that is an okay thing to have that level of patience. And the comment and the reaction had come in that said, you know, well, what about the kupuna? What about the people who aren't here? You know, it's hard to take that kind of level of patience. I do have... Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that it doesn't seem appropriate to look for your solution to an act of God.
Right.
I mean, unless you're actually looking for an act of God, but to hope for a tsunami or a hurricane doesn't really seem an effective strategy.
Right. It doesn't really cause people to be... very calm, though I did appreciate just that reality of saying, yeah, this is an unfair situation.
Mm.
And what kind of they kind of came to at the end there is trying to offer a trade for some land that the county owns. That sort of surprised me. You know, I was a little bit like, well, you know, maybe an and. But I understand why these guys are making this hard of a stand, because if not now, then when? If not here, then where? Because we will end up, you know, mowing over and plowing over every existing lo'i, every piece. You know, we could have all of that beautiful area back there in Hanalei and Lumahai, every place. We could look like Oahu.
If we kick those Hawaiians off of their ancestral land, we should be ashamed every time we promote the Hawaiian culture to our tourists.
Well, that's a very good point, and almost daily people are being kicked off their land, right?
Right.
It's an economic push, and the economic push is happening to, you know, all demographics, not just Hawaiian, but the people with the longest heritage is a very big issue. I think what I do want to play, I had been talking with Kaimi Hermasura, and I had asked him a number of things, but this was a question relative to the people who are in the industry where they're selling the land, right? And so whenever we're in sales, we're going to give the best pitch, and sometimes we don't just put right on that disclaimer, the DROA, hey, you know what? You're buying in a contested area. The neighbors are all going to be angry. You're displacing a really critical population. There's a problem here. So let me just play this little piece with Kaimi. I'm hoping it works. Do I have the wrong spot? I do. Hang on. Sorry. pushed the wrong button.
You go about going and doing this and yesterday, this thing in motion and settle this thing by creating some kind of document or a resolution, written resolution.
Right here, he's talking about the solution he wants. But
to ensure that the grubbing and excavations is going to be stopped until further notice, until things are settled, until things are made clear in Pono with all the county agencies and federal agencies and that may be involved, you know. So this is actually a precedence for the rest of Hawaii to, in a way, to bring these things to light. And these are questions that families and Hawaiians and people alike had for a very long time. And how do we go about going and doing this? And yesterday was a very powerful spiritual day as we all gathered as family, and even with other politicians and governmental, agencies and everyone there wearing their different hats, we all came together as family to assert what is the right thing to do.
It's wonderful to hear that we are coming to good practices, and at a spiritual level, I think you are emerging as a spiritual leader in this community. Do you have, from a heart frame of love, a message to the people, particularly even Kanaka people, who work within the real estate industry, of how best to practice their craft in a way that is pono or righteous?
Well, for my expectations yesterday, I was a little, having a different mindset and of where we're going to end with. Having something in writing that we all can sign, a document or a resolution written by everyone of what's the process, what's the system that we're going to create, how do we go about doing this, creating a pamphlet, creating the summary, creating a law to protect our interests to lo'i. How creating a system in their system about how do we go about finding our kuleana lands for people and families who don't know? How do we go about obtaining our interests to them? And just basic information. And how do we register an education for the people? How to do that? And it's by law, and it's their right. And on top of that, for them to stop the desecration themselves, the realtors. To know what is pono, know what is right, and understand that the kingdom of Hawaii still exists and their titles are fraudulent. And they cannot sell the lo'i, which they have been, and these are sacred places. As a spiritual person and leader of our community and our families, it's very, makes me do a lot of work. When people come to me asking me and telling me that they have spiritual troubles and spiritual problems, one of that is the reason is because some things are to be sacred all the time. Especially our lo'is, our rocks, our pohaku, our burial sites, and most of all, just our people. So this is where it all stops. This is where the lie stops. I'm calling all you guys, all the realtors and companies, this is where the families come back and balance comes back to our people. You guys have stole, and you guys have pillaged, you guys have raped, you guys have lied, you guys have ripped off, you guys made all you guys' money. That all stops now. As kahuna, as konohiki, as a light healer, I bless this energy to be unfolded and manifested in prosperity and harmony for all of us. Therefore, your business, therefore the mentality, and therefore that energy has to be corrected. Stop. You as a person, a human being, find the right way. Find the right solution. Do the right thing for the children of Hawaii, all of us. Eo napua o Hawaii. Answer the children of Hawaii. Do you care? Is there light in your heart? Are you a soul of being? Are you a human being existing in this lifetime now? Clearing your karmas with your ancestral lineage. Clearing your karmas with other ancestors that we have, doing what's right to the land, because that's where we come from. Halo alau kapilili oke ko, the breath of life, our people, our cosmology, our way of life, we are existing. We are the ones to correct and the keepers of heaven. So do the right thing. I ask you, I beg you, I inform you, I aloha you. Mahalo kia kua.
And that was Kaimi Hermasura, I would say the unofficial leader of what is happening in Wainiha, working hard to be reclaiming land and be turning around the laws, regardless of what they are, on how the land is taken from, especially special lands, taken from the traditional practitioners. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Second Skin Naturals.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So we have a caller. Thank you for holding. Aloha, you're on the air, KKCR.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, I have a kind of an announcement. I would like to invite anybody who is interested in working with the local traditional Hawaiian soil colors, the tapa colors, to my gallery in Hanapepe. This is Arias Hotman, so it's the Arias Hotman Gallery. On Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5, and I'll also have a workshop the next Saturday after that. I think that's the 21st or 22nd. I'm not sure. I am now doing a lot of painting with the local pigments, and they're so beautiful, huge variety of colors here on the island that people are quite astonished to see when they come into the gallery. And these are available to anybody, and they're actually relatively easy to process, to refine them up to modern artistic standards. So the workshop is going to be from 3 to 5 this coming Saturday and next coming Saturday. And I also want to thank you, Felicia, very much for your balanced presentations and always interested in listening to all sides of the story. That is so important, rather than taking a biased stance one against the other. I'm really quite amazed at how you're able to pull it off to have this level of equanimity and balance in your presentations. So thank you very much.
And thank you. And you know what it is, I think, is that, you know, how do we look at each other in compassion, empathy, and respect? To listen from where they might be coming from, because all of us are somewhat just struggling in this game. And I want to honor you for your art and for your sharing of your art. So just so I'm really clear, this is like how you paint with, for lack of a better word, dirt, like red dirt, brown dirt, charcoal. Do I have that right?
It's not even charcoal. It's all minerals. And all these minerals have weathered out from black lava over the last 5 million years. and they've turned into all these beautiful, radiant colors. We've got yellows, greens, blues, burgundies, grays, mauve, you name it. There's so many different colors,
okay.
And they're really quite astonishing when you refine them, which is really quite simple to do. That's part of what my workshop is.
So I'm just putting that out there so people understand what it is, and you do beautiful work. And when we actually listening to the angst of these people, and when you're out there on the land where we were just hearing about, it is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And even though it's this little, tiny, small, little sliver, they're doing the maximum what they can with that piece. And it's therapeutic, and it's healing. And a piece that we didn't really get to play in here is, like, here we have young men and women doing the most helpful, healing things, and they're being criminalized. And I want to say that, like, art and expression and then finding the beauty in the natural pigments in the world, that also, I have no doubt, is therapeutic and healing. So thank you so much for offering that this Saturday and next Saturday. So
And I want to give a special shout-out to Hawaiians, because these are their traditional colors. And it is basically hunting and gathering. You're hunting and gathering color. So it is, you're absolutely right. It's very therapeutic. It's love.
So thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. And when we're looking at how people help one another, the Lions, they just do amazing things to help people reach their dreams. And, you know, not just kids, anybody returning to school, they will help people with their tuitions. And they've got coming up their Lions Pancake Breakfast, and we're going to hear about that because they're working to help people, so we're working to help them.
It's that time again. The Kauai North Shore Lions Club is having its annual Hot Cakes and Hula Breakfast on Sunday, April 23rd from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m. at Honolulu Elementary School. Breakfast includes live entertainment featuring hula, music, lucky number drawings, and a silent auction. Breakfast takeouts are available. Tickets available at the door and at Princeville in front of Foodland from April 19th through the 22nd, or by calling Louis Lafrada at 808-482-0413. This is a major North Shore Lions fundraiser.
So you can help not just the Lions, but whoever benefits from them, by helping to support that and being a part of it. So our next feature that we're going to be talking about is rat lungworm disease.
Yay!
I know, it's scary. It's worms in your brain.
It sounds so bad.
I don't know that something could be much worse. So Dr. Lauren Pang, the head of the director of the Maui Department of Health, he's amazing. He should be coming out of a meeting any minute now and calling us and talking about it, but I think I could put a little context before he comes on the air. I know for me, and certainly on this show, I have been very resistive of what's called the Food Safety Modernization Act, because it feels like it pretty much criminalizes nature. You can't have animals and plants together, you know, growing everything in this almost synthetic environment. And I'm somebody who, you know, I got my little garden with so much food. I walk in right past the Suriname cherry bush and typically eat it and put it in my mouth on the way in. I can graze my yard. I'm not careful about not being barefoot. I'm happy to be barefoot.
Yeah, it's so great to pick a leaf even up from higher on a perennial tree or whatever and just eat it. But, yeah, sometimes I look at it and I'm like, maybe I really should clean it.
I know. Well, I'm trying to change my habits now. And, you know, when you look at what this is, like, there's been, you know, 9 cases of rat lungworm disease confirmed in Hawaii right now.
So it's Big Island in Maui, right?
Yes. And so in Maui, they had 6 really recently. And 2 were on vacation, 4 lived there. And, you know, when I put some posts on it and people said, hey, I just came from Maui, I just came from Hawaii, and there's no signs anywhere telling people to be careful, telling people not to be bringing plants or, you know, foods from one island to the next. And so from Dr. Lauren Pang, we will be hearing more about how the vectors of transfer are, but certainly the biggest suspect is snails. And as I've been reading these articles on it, it says, you know, 80% of snails tend to carry disease, and you shouldn't pick them up with your bare hands, which I do all the time. And I'm actually kind of careful to not kill them. I sort of throw them in a distance, and I know that it's really important to keep balance in our ecosystem. Everything has a role. That's why I tend to just live with, not against, most of the creatures. And there's, because I'm not selling my food in my yard and I have more than I can eat and give away, I figure, okay, I can share with the creatures. It's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. But I'm not willing to have worms in my brain.
Right.
And so, you know, we'll be hearing more directly from him, but looking at, you know, cooking everything. And in Asia, certain areas of Asia, they tend to cook everything. And that's probably because they have to sit there and really work on parasites. And I was, you know, had a reach out for help from some people in a certain area of the world. And I got a little bit of a scold from a friend who sent me some links on all these terrible parasites that are in that community and saying, you know, you got to be so careful. And I was horrified with that because there's something called mango worms. And those, the flies tend to lay their eggs in the T-shirts. Then you put the T-shirt on, and then the eggs bury into your skin, and then they take 18 days to roughly incubate, and then you've got worms coming out of your skin.
Okay, no, let's not get horrible. Confused, though.
So there's that one.
What is that one that you're just talking about?
That's called mango worm.
That's mango worm.
So I was just horrified to think, oh, you know, could I have accidentally, you know, in Aloha, maybe bring that here? And just really kind of thinking how shocking and awful that is. But then when I look at what this rat worm disease is, worms in your brain is even worse. This other thing doesn't kill you. So it's apparently very painful, and the worms, you know, burrow around in your brain and eventually die there. They can't make it out. But they can do a tremendous amount of damage in the, you know, roughly year that they might be alive in your brain. And then when I have been reading, this is, you know, recent testimony from people on Maui of what it has felt like and, you know, the incredible level of pain. And so, you know, I will be looking at this a little bit further, too, right? Today we're going to have Lauren Pang call in, but we will have Scott Enright. And also I really wanted to speak with Representative Russell Ruderman. It's his area that has the biggest challenge with that. And
he's from the Big Island?
He's from, yeah, the island of Hawaii. And he had a meeting that he's in right now, so he couldn't quite make it onto the air right now. But I think that we all need to really pay attention. So this is KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. And we are Kauai Soapbox, and we're going to be talking with the Department of Health. I believe he's on the phone. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, is this Dr. Pang?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Thank you so much for calling in. I was just giving the listeners a little bit about lung worm disease, but and kind of where I have a little bit of fear of it, and that I have some bad habits because I don't live in fear of my yarden. But can you tell us about it, and then, you know, where we're going with it and what's up?
Okay. Just let me know how long I have to talk so I can kind of pace myself or plan
You have up to 45 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then that includes phone-in calls from
people
with questions. Okay.
I'm off the air at 6.
Okay. So let me just give you kind of a background on this. When I was growing up in Honolulu in the 1960s, I was a kid, you know, like 10 years old. But people... My uncle, he was with the Department of Health, and he would tell my mother about these horrible things happening. And I remember really distinctly a couple of people died. They didn't call it rat lung disease. I don't know what they called it, but they said from eating African snails. The African snails were brought in as an ornamental whatever, mollusk for the garden, and they got out of control. Some people, visiting people from other countries, they thought the African snail looked like what they used to eat in Taiwan or Fiji, and they just ate them. And I guess they didn't cook them too well, and they got rat lung disease, and they died.
And I have a question for you, because I'm seeing that I have an unusual amount of listeners from Central and South America. Is it there also?
I don't know. I worked in Central South America a long time. I didn't see the African snail. But I know a lot of people eat snails, and they cook them.
Uh-huh.
But the people who died in Hawaii, there was like a East-West Center exchange student, you know, and says, whoa, this is a delicacy, et cetera. And then there was the special forces, the Green Berets on survival, trying to prove that they could survive, and they didn't cook it that well. But we weren't too concerned because those cases you could have prevented. Just don't do that.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, in the last, since 2004 on the Big Island, we have an invasive slug that came in, which is a very potent carrier of rat lung disease, Angiostrongylus. Let's just call it rat lung, of the germ. Now, at first, we said, well, it's always been here, so what's the big deal? This particular slug, they call it a semi-slug, it's invasive to Hawaii, and it was taking over parts, especially East Big Island. And so it seems to correlate when that slug takes over, we get a lot of cases. Well, why is that? First of all, that slug is a high carrier of the parasite. The parasite is a parasitic worm. It's what some people call rat lung, the parasite. So it's the rat lung parasite. But it was in the slug. Now, you should know that this germ is parasitic worm, parasite. It cycles between rat and snail and slug. Let's just call it slug, but it could be snail. Rat, slug, rat, slug, rat, slug, rat, slug. It's running its own cycle. It has to go through the slug. It cannot go rat, rat. It has to go through the rat. It cannot go slug, slug. So it's going through different stages, obligatory, passing its own cycle, and picking up a lot of steam here, especially with the new slug coming in, which carries the parasite very well. But it's off on its own. So if you go in a deep jungle and there's rats and slugs, that cycle will be carrying or running. Once in a while, man eats the slug form and we get the disease because the parasite coming out of the slug expects to see the rat and instead it sees us. And it passes in the rat, it passes through the brain and the lung. And in us, it's passing through the brain, but never quite makes it to the lung. We attack it. We see this parasite is very foreign, and we attack the germ, the parasite, in our brain. Now, in the rat, it's kind of fine-tuned. The cycle has been running around for ages, and it doesn't hurt the rat that much. It just uses the rat's brain and lung. In us, we kill it. Okay. So that's why we're kind of the dead-end host. We don't transmit it further, and that's how humans get it. But when we get this new slug, the semi-slug, it's kind of semi-slug because it's a half-snail, half-slug. It has a vestigial, a non-functional shell.
Okay.
And it's like a little cap on the back of the slug. It's the damnedest thing to see. When you see it, it's pretty memorable. And that is a high, high carrier of the parasite, so it's ramped up the cycle. Okay, so it was on the Big Island, east of Big Island, and spreading, and the cases were spreading too. And now we find that the slug itself is spreading across the Big Island, and we are wondering if the disease will follow suit. This is kind of like a slow epidemic. Epidemics can occur very quickly, but as far as slugs are concerned and rats are concerned, it's slow to us, maybe spreading over several years or decades, But as far as rats and slugs are concerned, that's pretty fast. Now, all of a sudden, we see this disease and this slug in Maui. Maui has been watching for rat lung disease ever since Big Island reported in 2004. In the last 10 years, we had two cases, maybe suspected, maybe confirmed. You need a lumbar puncture to confirm it, and some people say, I don't want that. So we really suspected or confirmed it in two cases in 10 years. Now, since January of this year, we are looking at maybe six cases confirmed getting it. I'm sorry, six cases suspected or confirmed getting it from Hana, and then two more Maui residents getting it from Big Island. So, you know, six cases in the last, 3 months versus two cases in 10 years. So we went out to look for the slug, and lo and behold, I didn't know what it looked like, but I went to Big Island and I saw it. And now I know what it looks like, and people are sending us pictures, and our team went out today. It's all over Hana. I mean, there's gobs of it. You don't even have to hunt it. Some areas, there seems to be none in Hana, and some areas are loaded. That's hopeful. Maybe we can.
What if chickens eat it? If the chickens eat it,
would ask. Yeah. Apparently, chickens eat the slug, and the parasite doesn't carry in the chicken.
Okay.
Now, humans eat the slug, and we don't take it past our brain. Cats eat the slug, and they get pretty sick. Dogs get real sick, and they don't pass it on. Mongoose. Oh, you guys don't have mongoose.
No, not really.
Mongoose seem to be beginning to take the place of rat. They can pass it on to the slugs. Now, you remember the rat, well, you don't know yet. The rats pass it on to the slugs in their poops, in their feces. So the slugs eat the rat feces. They take a couple forms of the parasite, and then the rat eats the slug. So it seems to be picking up in Maui. We had this before in the 60s, but now apparently we're having lots of it, and our cases don't have a single point. This disease comes from Asia, Southeast Asia, and they got big outbreaks when everybody eats or goes to some party and eats raw or undercooked shellfish or slugs.
Mm.
Now, that's reassuring. Just don't go to these places that don't have raw shellfish or slugs. But in the Hawaii cases and the Maui cases, we can't seem to pin down something in common. You know, not everybody ate something at some thing. They all kind of just eat everywhere all the time. It's kind of like you guys doing Kauai. So when you can't seem to pin it down to one point exposure, it's very frightening for the community because there's nothing quite to avoid.
Dr. Peng, can I ask you something about the vector then? You said that humans get it from the snail and not from the rat, but the snails get it from the rat feces. Is that correct?
Right. The snail gets it from the rat feces, and we cannot because it's the wrong form.
We cannot get it from rat feces.
No, you can get other stuff from the rat feces.
But how about human feces? Will it come out in human feces? Like if somebody comes from a different island and has it in their brain, will it come out and go into
mostly the... Mostly we kill it in the brain.
Okay.
Some rare might go into, like following the rat, into the lung, into our feces. But you remember, in human feces, that's the form, if it ever came out rarely, that's the form that the slug would have to take.
Okay.
It must go through rat, slug, rat, slug, rat, slug. So if it comes out in the humans, kind of like taking the place of the rat. So if we did pass it, it would be to slug. But we don't. We mostly kill it in our own bodies. And that is a problem causing the illness. When you attack germs in your own body, especially in your brain, you cause a lot of inflammation. And it's that inflammation that has a lot of collateral damage, destroying the germ, but destroying a lot of your tissue as well, especially your nerves. And some of that is scarring and permanent and will never come back. It depends what part of the brain or spinal cord. Remember, it's not just the brain, but the spinal cord you damaged permanently from the scarring. Okay.
Now, do we have to eat the slug itself or the kind of slime that it leaves on a collard leaf or whatever? Can we get it from that?
Yes. Now, I think the slime is less potent. They actually, the Big Island guys looked at the slime, and there's less parasite in the slime per gram of slime than there is per gram of slug. But sometimes they say when you irritate the slug, like you're washing your vegetables hoping to wash off a slug, and you put a little Clorox, you put a little soap, you put a lot of vinegar, when you irritate the slug like that, it puts out more parasites in the slime. There's one more way you can get it. That form that's coming out of the slug, that form, it can go into carrier host. It doesn't need to go for development, but it can go into prawns, freshwater prawns and shrimp, frogs, freshwater frogs, and then for other places, like you can say freshwater crabs. We don't have freshwater crabs.
But like opihi, something in the salt water, they would not have it.
That's correct. We're lucky, so count your blessing. It doesn't go into opihi. But we have a freshwater mollusk we eat, TEY. I'm glad we cooked that. Cooking will kill the parasite. Boiling for 3 to 5 minutes will kill the parasite. Your prawns that we all catch, well, I catch prawns. If you freeze it 24 hours, it'll kill the parasite. But if you catch prawns tonight, today, for tonight's feast, you should really, really cook those things.
Okay. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai's Soapbox. We have Dr. Lauren Pang from the Maui Department of Health on the phone with us. We have a caller. You want to take a call?
Sure. It's up to you guys.
Okay.
We
can take it together. You have a question for Dr. Pang?
Hi. Yes. A couple of points. Number one, my understanding is that if the produce is washed properly, then you get rid of the pathogen. Okay. Those people, I'm assuming, would not have been infected if they had washed their produce properly. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Right.
When we
the second point I have is that.
Go ahead.
This is one of the reasons we've invented pesticides. In this case, specifically rodenticides and molluscicides. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay. So did you hear that? He was saying one of the reasons we have.
Yes.
Molluscicides, pesticides to kill snails. Do you have feedback on that?
Oh, wait. The first question. If you prepare your food, wash it carefully, you can avoid this totally. But you have to be a little more vigilant. Sometimes these slugs or snails, the baby ones, can be almost invisible. So on Maui, we have this program called hyper cleaning. Well, it looks clean. Well, can you wash it anyway? Just get that vegetable brush. And when you, a lot of times these slugs, invisible slugs, small slugs, are at the base of your green, your bok choy or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than cut through it, if you cut through it, you're going to cut through the slug, and it's going to be lots of parasites coming out. Pull off the leaves and rinse it. Try not to cut the whole thing across. Okay, and then rinse it. If you can do that, that's fine. But if you say, well, I never did this before, I'm okay. Yeah, well, we live in a different age now. We live in the age of the semi-slug. So you just have to kind of step it up. I want people to eat local and green things. You just have to be a little more careful.
Dr.
Now, the second question. We had rodenticides to kill rodents, mice and rats. We have molluscicides to kill slugs and snails. But I didn't hear the second part. I mean, yes, we have these things. Now, the value of it, since we don't have a point source on Maui, I don't go to these festivals that undercook shellfish. We don't know. So we're going to have to try to control the rats as best we can and control the mollusk as best we can. There are chemicals you can put out for the mollusk. Some work pretty well, some don't work too well. There's a website from the Big Island. They've evaluated all these things. And then there's more, like, non-chemical control of the mollusk, which we're trying to put forth, test actually in Hana. They claim it works very well in Pahoa on the Big Island, and we would like to try that also. So there are these things to control it, but the third, there's actually four arms to this. Control your rats, control your slugs, especially around your food crops. Clean off your produce before you eat it. And then my point is, when you get these symptoms, they can be kind of mild. Headache, fever, weakness, maybe a rash. Try to go see your doctor. Why? If it's rat lung, we can help you through it, but there's not a specific treatment. But as your immunity flares up to attack it, we can tone down your immunity or step up your immunity. But what if it's not rat lung? A lot of these things look like that. Headache, fever, body ache, like leptospirosis, lepto on Kauai. Well, if it's not rat lung, then it's leptospirosis. We need a lab test, and there is antibiotic treatment which works pretty well for leptospirosis, and if you don't get it quickly, you could have bad problems with lepto. So, yeah, we might not be able to do too much for rat lung, but what if it's not rat lung?
Well, will you die from rat lung? It looked like you would to me.
Say again?
Do you die from rat
lung? Yeah, some people die. Some people have permanent damage. They're paralyzed. Some people are never quite the same. I mean, it's like permanent brain changes. A lot of people do get better. A lot of people don't even get sick, I guess. We're not real sure. But in Southeast Asia, maybe only 5% of the people get sick and come to the hospital.
That's encouraging.
Go ahead.
That's encouraging. And then there was a caller with a question. Marshall, what was the question?
It's Dr. Peng, a caller wanted to know if there's a danger from canned goods.
No, canned goods are pasteurized, and then that kills the germ, the parasite.
Okay.
Now, if it's not pasteurized, I mean, then you'd worry about more than rat lung. You worry about botulism. I mean, good grief, that's chemically lethal. No, canned goods are fine. Cooked vegetables are fine if you cook it equivalent of 3 to 5 minutes of boiling. Now, if you say, well, what's stir fry? I don't know. You have to ask my wife, what's the equivalent of 3 minutes boiled vegetables versus stir fry? And it's not blanching. Blanching is not boiling for 3 to 5 minutes. Or you're going to eat raw vegetables and carefully inspect it. Or you're going to do the stir fry and carefully inspect it. Or you're going to blanch and carefully inspect
it. What would you inspect, though?
Oh, you're looking for, you're looking for gross, obvious slugs and snails. But even if you don't see that, like my wife, she's really into this. Just use a vegetable brush and brush off things that might be so small you can't see it. Especially, I'm older now and I couldn't see it if it was really there. But I could brush it off. Okay.
This is what I wanted to ask you about, Dr. Pan, because earlier you mentioned invisible slugs.
Yeah.
So,
eggs, invisible eggs.
Right? Yeah. So okay. we're actually looking at needing to wash vegetables where even if we're looking closely, we may not see what's on there that we need to get
especially
off.
The older folks like me with bad eyesight. Furthermore, there's a beautiful report by Dr. Hollingsworth on the Big Island. I went to see him in 2004 when I was saw my first couple cases here on Maui. In the report, he actually says that the semi-slug, the one that's taking invasive, if you look at the baby of the semi-slug, it's not that small and it's not that big. I mean, it looks like the size of two periods on the paper.
Two dots, on the paper, okay.
Okay. But he says that there is yet another worm. It's called the flatworm. It hunts down the semi-slug. It secretes a fluid and kills the semi-slug and sucks up the fluid, like extra stomach digestion.
Hmm.
Great, you killed the semi-slug. But that one, this predatory flatworm, it can carry the parasite also. And that one, the babies are very small and almost invisible.
Hmm.
So, you know, how many worms we got carrying this stuff? I think we got plenty of worms that can carry it.
It's a little
scary. How many worms are small? I think plenty of worms are small.
And Marshall, somebody called with another question. What was it?
Why don't we get rid of the rats, basically? Can we just,
I think we've been trying.
Is there any reason that we want rats here on this island?
Probably no. Rats are invasive. We did, Hawaiian Islands did well without rats to our basic ecology. I don't think rats do any useful service. But don't forget, a lot of these snails and slugs, they're invasive too. So why don't we just get rid of as best we can all? That is correct. You need a multi-pronged approach. Why? Because mathematically, when you study these disease effects, it's better to attack it at all points. The second point is what we call diminishing returns. After I do my best and do the low-hanging jobs on the slugs, well, enough already. I'm not going to kill myself hunting out the 10th slug, I mean the final slug. It's time to move on some rats. That's correct. You do the easiest stuff because to hunt out one part of the cycle, you get diminishing returns.
So it's like, you know, when we have a little bit of a scare of dengue fever, we try and make sure we don't have standing water. People, they got to look for rats. They got to look for slugs. What about moving between the islands? I had somebody Facebook me and say they had, you know, they went from Hawaii to Maui to Kauai and never even saw a sign, were never even aware of it until I made some posts about this, that they don't see anything. What is the Department of Health and the Department of Ag working on?
Okay, we really do suspect it's coming with plants moving between the islands, okay, the nursery plants, between islands. Within an island, from Maui, let's say Maui to central Maui, if we look in between and we see it, we don't see the slug. Of course, the rats are there, but we don't see the slug. What is it? Is it jumping because of rats? I don't think so. I think it's plants again. Plants move within Maui. Nursery plants, kalo, you know, changing, exchanging huli. And recently, we saw a bunch of Ava, you know, from the Hawaiian Ho'olelea festival, they claimed that a lot of slugs were in the Ava. I mean, you know, okay, so plants move within an island, plants move between islands, and we got to kind of address this. Also, they said it's not just the food plants, flowers. Apparently, the Hana people are reporting loads of this slug in the Heliconia. I got to go on Friday to see for myself. I've never quite believe things till I see it or remember it till I see it myself. But, you know, this kind of movement between islands has really got to kind of stop. It's more than just slugs moving in between islands. There's plenty of stuff. The Koki frog, little fire ant, stinging nettle caterpillar.
So is this Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture partnering on this and putting up warning signs, or is there anything in the airports? I mean, why aren't we hearing more about it? It seems like this would be terrible if it got a good hold.
Every time you see a new pest moving between islands via the plants, it's kind of a warning sign, but maybe people got saturated with it. You know, the stinging nettle caterpillar, the koki frog, the little fire ant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when there's health issues on pests moving between islands, say the semi-slug, well, now you have people's attention. But don't forget, about 5 or 6 years ago, they really cut down vector control. I mean, they cut out, they gutted my department. And now they're piecing them back together again. But are these guys still around to hire? Yeah, they kind of are. But you cannot have this thing up and down, up and down. And you try to dealing with a slow epidemic, say, spreading over 10 years. And you're gutting and building, gutting and building, gutting and building your own vector control departments. That's kind of odd.
Well, the governor at the town hall meeting that we had here last Thursday, he spoke about new Department of Ag policies for, you know, bringing plants in. Do you know anything about that? I know that might be more a Scott Enright question from the Department of Agriculture, but, you know, we get checked to not bring things out of the state or out of the islands, but, you know, other than just a little honor box of saying, well, do you have any oranges or anything like that? And people say yes or no, and, you know, you drop it off in a box. But, I mean, there's virtually no barriers to bringing something here.
Yeah, between islands and within an island.
And from the continental United States as well.
Oh, yes, that too. But sometimes the problems, the diseases of plants, maybe humans, they're not so much in the U.S. coming here. For example, rat lung. Oh, let's say the semi-slug. Do they have that on the mainland coming here? No, they don't. What do they have in the mainland that could come here? whole West Nile virus. Now, these diseases can span anywhere from the virus to the bacteria to the parasite to the pest itself. It's like stinging nettle caterpillar. So there's not too much stuff coming out of the mainland coming here. There's more like the hui sensed up there because they have a warm summer. But in general, why do we do this? We brought in so many nursery plants. Do I have to buy on Maui my nursery plant from the Big Island? We have it here. Well, it's cheaper if I buy it in from the Big Island. Well, can we not do that? Now, don't forget, within an island, I'm trying to control this slug to keep it in Hana. You know, it might spread 7 years on its own to Haiku, which is down the road. So there's between island, within island, and then from other places to the islands. Sometimes we bring it in intentionally. You know, like the African snail that was supposed to be ornamental. Peaks.
Right.
Anyway. You get the idea.
So
I'm live on the movements.
I'm feeling a little less scared talking to you because, like, what I was reading is that these people, when you get it in running around in your brain, that it's incredibly excruciating, that your life can pretty much, well, stop altogether or not function for about a year. It seems like these things can live in your brain for a year. I'm hearing you say that there are some people who don't even really notice that they have it, so they must have a robust system that's able to kill it off?
Yes. This is what we're seeing in Southeast Asia, that maybe 1 out of 20 people become clinical and sick. But I was warned yesterday from my colleague, Dr. Myers and Hanna. He said, well, maybe that's true. We're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. Or maybe we have something here in Hawaii where if you get it, you're really sick. Say 8 cases in Hana, there were only 8 cases. They're all sick. Or is that just the tip of the iceberg and a lot of people aren't sick? So Big Island, 14, maybe 15 cases last year. Mm. They're going to say, and how many infections were now? So it could go either way right now.
And if I heard
all
you
of it,
correctly,
and we're all sick, or there's a lot of people who aren't sick not coming in.
If I fluid to be able to determine if the person has that parasite in their system. So it takes some serious.
That's correct, but there's a new test which might be depending on blood to diagnose it. That blood test will be a little late. It will tell you after the fact, yes, this was rat lung, just for epidemiologic purpose. Mm-hmm. How much do we have? But it might not be good enough to diagnose it because some of the worms, the germs, the parasites, after you eat them, they transit the blood, and in 18 or 24 hours, they're in the brain. So you need a little time for the blood to make a response if you got a blood test.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't help the person, but it helps in this historical surveillance.
Right, which is an important piece. And
yes,
you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. We have Maui Department of Health Chair Dr. Lauren Pang. Marshall, you had another question?
Dr. Pang, you mentioned a website with information on rat lungworm disease out of the Big Island. Is that malamaopuna.org?
I can't remember. I just know Maui's. Maui is called mauiready.org, and we give links to that website, too. County of Maui has websites which all. I've seen the Big Island a couple of times, their website, but I can't remember.
And I have, Molokai, Oahu, Hawaii are all listening in right now. Can you tell people on Hawaii where the most concentrated areas are? We're hearing that Hana is most concentrated on Maui. Is there any record of it yet on Molokai?
That's correct. We don't have any reports of it yet on Molokai.
Right.
Dr. Kennedy, I was in Maui in 2006. I think it was that year that dengue fever came to Maui.
Maui was 2001.
Oh, was it
the day after 9/11?
Wow, was it that? Okay, and so
yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, too long to have it straight. But I remember Hana was particularly hard hit, and people didn't particularly want to drive the road to Hana with all the mosquitoes down there and with dengue on the island. So tourism took a hit. Are you seeing a decline in tourism on Maui because of this?
I'm not sure. And it depends how widespread the news is and what the tourists look at it as. Now, I saw this on CNN. But, you know, we're trying to give the message that we can be taken care of. Now, tourists, they depend on the restaurants. So we're going to have to focus on restaurants. We already have sanitation. If people just follow what, you know, step it up, fine. But over the year, people, you know, kind of clean, and you say, hey, look, clean, I expected it to be sanitary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, you know, we're going to have to bite the bullet and fix things a little bit. I don't know. You remember, well, you don't know, but some of the infected gay guys, confirmed cases, they were visitors from San Francisco. It's the front page, the headline news today in Maui. They came forth and said, we want to give our talk about us so other people don't get infected. So visitors have gotten it.
Yes.
On a rocky forest.
We have another caller on the line. Aloha, thank you for holding.
I was just wondering, what about, you know, if people, like, I've heard of other parents, like, dying, if you happen to, you know, because of the person's diet, like eating a lot of garlic, eating a lot of onions, eating a lot of cayenne pepper, do you think that would have a stomach?
So I'm going to take that off the air, caller, because it's hard to hear you. But,
can you repeat the question, Felicia?
Yes. She's saying, what about your diet if you eat a lot of garlic and cayenne pepper and onions? Like, can you make your own system robust by what you eat?
No. I'm pretty sure you can't. I don't know specifically for rat lung disease, but for all the other parasites, I don't think your diet really affects it that much. Furthermore, if you say, I'm going to boost my immune system, well, maybe that's okay as the parasite comes through your intestinal and your blood for the first 24 hours. But when it goes into your brain, it's your boosted immune system which attacked it, which is causing all the damage.
Mm, okay.
So
mm-hmm.
Sometimes you got to titrate that immune system perfectly. You do want to kill it, but not so much all at once to cause some horrible catastrophe. When you attack germs, your white cells are pretty toxic. You're killing the germs and killing your own nerves in the collateral damage.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why it's been a rocky course for a lot of these people.
So, and you at the top of the hour, we're going to hear from Jazz with John, just wanting to let our listeners know that. So let me ask for clarity, Dr. Pang. When your immune system works, you damage your nerves when you are killing germs or parasites or anything else. You're actually hurting your own body at the same time?
Especially in your brain, and sometimes dengue. You remember dengue?
Yeah, dengue, that's a problem here.
Very severe, they call it immuno-enhancement problem. You're controlling your dengue. You got so much immunity that you attacked all the dengue all at once, which is in the small vessels of your body, and you start to bleed and get shocked.
Mm.
So, yes, I mean, it's good to fight germs. But when you get such a massive, strong response all at once or in your brain, goodness, that we got problems with that. So the doctors, they will try to study this. When it flares up, maybe give you a little bit steroids to cool your immune system. They're going to have to catch and go. That's why it's these cases that are in the ICU, you know, like a couple of weeks or so, the docs kind of have to watch very carefully how much inflammation is occurring.
Okay.
Some inflammation is good. Otherwise, the worm's going to live forever, wandering around your brain. But it's the timing.
everything is timing at this one.
So thank you for all this information. And for listeners, tomorrow on In the Garden on the Farm, there's going to be our extension agent that it helps to look for that. She will be on. Her name is Catherine. She's going to be on the show with Paul Massey. She will also be at the Hawaii Farmers Union United tomorrow evening. And for my Hawaii Farm Bureau friend that I know is listening, who I'm always arguing the Food Safety Modernization Act, I don't particularly like it. This happens to be an example of where it could be very good to be heavily, you know, sanitizing your plants and animals and separating them. Dr. Pang, we are just about out of time because I have a few things coming up before Jazz with John, like the county council report. Do you have a final thought?
Yes. A lot of people think I'm against GMOs and pesticides. I'm for these things and weighing their consequences again when health enters. But if you say, oh, I'm going to do these things just to grow food, I think I can grow food without them. But if you're going to tell me the health consequences, let's put everything on the table. Okay? But when we don't have a health consequence and you say, I like chemicals and GMOs just to grow food, well, I don't know about that, because we are not supposed to use chemicals willy-nilly, because that's how resistance develops. As you use them on your plants, all those other pathogens are becoming resistant to them, and you're making super weeds and super this and super that. You are to use them focally. And they say, yes, we do, integrated pest management. I think I want it a little more focal than that.
So thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pang.
Okay, take care.
Okay, we really appreciate you very, very much. And across all the islands, we've got a number of listeners on the other islands. So mahalo.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Aloha. Okay, so Kauai Community College next week, Monday, April 17th. The Maui social and environmental activist, Tiare Lawrence, she's going to be there 3 p.m., KCC One Stop Center, Pupus by the Greenery. Tuesday, April 18th, Community Action, Kona to Halalea with Kaina Makua, Kalo farmer and educator, Emily Cadiz, Hyena community organizer, 3 to 5 p.m. At KCC Hawaiian Studies. Thursday, Y panel from 3:30 to 6, featuring Eric Hansen, Adam Asquith, Mike DeHelig, Jerry Ornelas, and Kui Palama. So that's actually a pretty good range of people from 3:30 to 6. At the One Stop Center, most probably going to be live streaming on KKCR. Wednesday, April 19th, Jonathan Osorio. He's just got so much that he does, and he's a singer, songwriter, but activist, lots of things. 3 to 6 p.m., KCC, One Stop Center. I'm seeing that we got a lot from the greenery, too. Great food in here. Friday, April 21st, 10 to noon, KCC Student Hoike in the One Stop Center. 10 to 1:30, Aloha Aina Nonprofit Expo, the Apiary, Ag Farm Tours, Cooking Demo with Go Farm, the Hybrid Electric Vehicle, and there's music from noon to the end of the day, Duncan Kamakana and John Osorio. So thank you so much. And we're going to hear a little bit more of the encouragement.